Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Special episode 25, summary of the Irish mythological cycle and Equinox Special. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. If you'd like to contact us or send us some feedback, you can send us an email to garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com or contact us on Facebook.
You can find us and our news blog on the web at celticmythpodshow.com, again with no spaces. So, this episode is going to be a bit different from the last few episodes we've released.
Yes, that's right. Today we're going to talk about the Irish mythological cycle and try to summarise the last 29 story shows, not including the holiday specials, of course.
Okay. Do you know, I still can't believe that we finished the stories from the Irish mythological cycle.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? It's a bit like saying goodbye to old friends, really.
Well, it is. We've become very fond of the characters and their tales. One of our listeners, Stephen, also known as Greenwood the Bard, has written a poem about the myth stories, which retells the story in a way that the old poetic sagas did.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought we could read his saga throughout the show to remind us of the stories as we talk about them.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea. And let's have some music as well.
Absolutely. Did you have anything in mind?
Yes, but you'll have to wait to see what I've planned.
Okay then.
The only clue I'm giving you is that one of our all-time favourite singers has a new album out, and we've got some of her music for you.
Ah, so it's a lady. Can't wait. Right then. So in this show, we're going to split it up into three sections. Firstly, we're going to look at the origins and sources of the tales, then try to identify the main themes that come out of the tales as a whole, before finishing with a reminder about the main characters or gods that we meet in them. Does that sound good?
Sounds great to me.
Okay.
So let's have some news and views first, shall we?
Why not?
Filming has started on the Spirit of Albion, the movie, and there'll be a link in the show notes to the short video diaries of the making of this film on YouTube.
Did you know they'd already released a teaser for the movie?
Ooh.
So you can have a link to that as well. That's well worth seeing. And we've actually been lucky enough to accompany the cast and crew on some of their shoots as well. And that's really fascinating.
It is. We've been recording some of the behind-the-scenes chats with the actors and actresses and some of the crew, and we're going to try and bring you a small show to introduce you to them all. It was a fabulous experience.
It was, wasn't it? What about an interview with the director?
Well, we'll just have to see, won't we?
Oh, Should we move on to the show?
Yes, that's a great idea. I thought we'd start with a lovely track from our friend, Anne McWhidden, called She de Vermoy, which means She's Your Granny.
She's Your Granny. Love it. Love it. We're lucky enough to have a translation in the show notes as well. So here we go with Anne McWhidden and She de Vermoy.
She's a lamoy, she's a lamoy, she's a lamoy, Kalahanadigut. She's a lamoy, a walletish worry, cause Marishi Kushja, but a hushadigut. Baldegas and steam go shadowly langs me, Roy Galchen, Fuchsher and Academy. Hooks and stolen in order of hose, the quinnix, she's a whole of Kalahanadigut. She's a lamoy, she's a lamoy, she's a lamoy, Kalihanadigut. She's a lamoy, a walletish worry, cause what if she cursed you about her shuddigut? Mustn't do boss, and mustn't do boss, and mustn't do boss, a bachelor of malicia. Tossin' a boss, a tossin' a boss, a more tesher, all castola chantadigut. She's a lamoy, she's a lamoy, she's a lamoy, Kalihanadigut. She Shiva Vamaya Valarishvariga Svarishikashtya Varaha Sharga. Skeritka Bose Vajramalisha. Skeritka Bose Shanimishvariga Svaranikakasi. Shiva Vamaya Kalihanarga. Shiva Vamaya Valarishvariga Svarishikashtya Varaha Sharga.
Andy, that was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Oh, it really was. I wish I could sing like that.
I'd just love to have the fluency in Irish to start with.
We'll have the full translation of the Irish in the app extra if you're interested in following this up in a bit more detail.
Let's continue by reminding you about the events that happened in the first part of the mythological cycle by bringing you the first part of Stephen's epic poem called The Land of Light. Land of Light. Mighty magic was made, daring deeds were done on the four islands blessed by the Shining Ones. On Phalias dwelt the Leofal, Stone of Destiny. On Gorias was the Spear of Lu of Shining Victory. On Findias was kept Nuada's sword, daringly drawn. On Morias, the cauldron, where men are refreshed and reborn. From these lands our legends were brought to birth. None can tell if they dwell in the heavens or the earth. From these islands to Erin came the fair folk, in 3 days and 3 nights of fire and smoke. Danu's children knew this for their ancestors' home. But since then, the Fearbolg had made it their own. So they set up a camp that could clearly be seen, guarded by the three that between them were queen. Bards and druids went forth with a message next day that the Fearbolg must share the land and make way. But the Fearbolg had warriors and wise men of their own, and Yoki the king would not give up his throne. So each side could see the chance of victory or defeat. It was agreed the people's champions would meet. Sreng the strong and Bress the beautiful met on the field to see what weapons one another would wield. After that, the bards of the Fearbold king had nothing but ballads of battle to sing. The Tuatha De Danann, as they're called in Erin's tongue, put their prophecy and poetry in the songs that were sung, that a great flight of ravens would sweep over the sand. And this meant there would be war, but it would cleanse the land. The names of Conn and Cuchulainn would fill songs and stories. But first, the fighters would grapple for glory, a pledge of peace to prepare for what was in store. But in a quarter of a year, there would be war.
By the dawn of Midsummer's Day, the Fearbolg youth were tired of peace, but their elders upheld their fragile ceasefire. So they played the men of day at hurling to show their skill. And during the match, they attacked. 3 times 9 of Danu were killed. This provocation ended the peace, and waiting warriors rose with a wall of shields, a forest of spears, swords to dazzle their foes. Poet Fatah raised a stone pillar and climbed up to boast, but he wept when he foresaw a plain of pillars, graves for the host. Battle Crow, threefold queen, with mist and magic led the attack. With passion and purpose, Feribolg fighters beat them back. To a healing well of herbs-blessed waters went the Feribolg king, and 3 healers of the Tuatha Dé stood and challenged him. The nameless guardian of that place rushed to his aid. All 4 were slain, and King Yoki laid them all in 1 grave. From red dawn to red dusk, the Feribolg fought the men of Dé, but neither side took any ground, and neither side gave way. Next day, men of Danu marched with Dagda, called the Great God in boast, while Fintan of the Flood and his 13 sons led the Feribolg host. The shouts of the Sidhe from the hollow hills whipped the waters to waves. King Eoki followed 3 sons of Nemed, ancient race, to the grave. Shreng fought Dwada, Danu's king, and struck off his sword arm. But the Feribolg champion was beaten, and the battlefield grew calm. With Nuada wounded, the Feribolg rose to fight again on the morrow. But only 300 remained, with no leaders to follow. With his last act as king, Nuada called for fighting to cease and offered the Feribolg their land in Connachta to live in peace. He laid down his crown that he might go to be healed, and in his place they crowned the fiercest fighter on Moytura Plain, the beautiful Brace. The name of the Feribolg of Connachta remained on poet's breath, for it was their descendants that Cathaoirleach fought to the death. So Brace was crowned High King of Erin at Tara, his high seat, where stood the stone Leofaoil that roared beneath a true king's feet.
The Price of Peace. Back before the Flood, Danu's race blessed Erin and vowed to come again. Pardalon and Nemed came after. Of then, only Tuan and Fintan remain. Since time out of mind, races of Erin were subdued by the Fëanor, tyrannical tax collectors from the dark land just off the shore. Erin's hope was Feribolg Princess Taeltew's foster son, for he was half-blood, Danu, and Fëanor. By his hand would the land be won. Hidden from the Tuatha Dé Danann, he wandered the land alone, but they sorely needed a kinder king than Brace on Tara's throne. Even Dagda, wide and bold, and his brother Ogma, warrior bard, were enslaved, though their bloodline was divine, for Bress's heart was hard. Brace denied Cairbre the welcome due to a bard, and was cursed. If things went well for Brace before, from that day his fate was worse. Nuada's healer healed his wound with silver, and Silverhand he was named. But his son did more, restored royal flesh, and the old healer was ashamed. He killed his son in a rage, scattered the healing herbs from his grave, so that by his hand alone could wounded warriors be saved. With the true king healed, Brace was rejected, and he returned to his mother and asked who his father was.
If I can't rule my race, I'll join with another.
Eriu told how a Fëanor prince came to her, an innocent maid with a ship of silver, a body like bronze, and robes of gold brocade. She gave her maidenhood to him. They made love in a bed of heather. His name was Ilata, and she longed to return to him forever. She named her son Bres, Beautiful Fury, but none was as handsome as he. And by the ring he wore, he would be known by his father over the sea. As was custom, the Fomor put Bres to mock battle with horse and hounds. But when their champion challenged him, his long-lost father was found. It was Prince Ilata himself who recognized him by his ring. But he knew Bres was a tyrant, wouldn't help him be king. Bres went to the Fomori king, Balor of the Evil Eye, who thought at first that Tuatha De Danann had sent a spy. But when Bres asked his aid against Nuada Silverhand, with greedy grin he agreed, for he longed to conquer Erin's land.
Well, it all comes flooding back, doesn't it? Beautiful imagery, Stephen, and a wonderful poem. I'm looking forward to reading the rest now.
Absolutely. Stephen, we love it. So, before we move on to the historical origins of the mythological cycle, let's have a bit more music.
Well, I think this is our first Welsh tune, and it's called Morfa Frenhines, which means The Queen's Marsh, by a band we love called Dark Patrick.
That was Morvar Frenhines by Dark Patrick from their album Fonir Gol Onle, The Dawning of the Day. The haunting melody was also used as a tune for Raglan Road, but originally it told the story of an Aisling, a dream or vision, a vision that a poet had when encountering a lady who represented Erin.
That was really beautiful.
So let's have a look now at where the stories of the Irish mythological cycle came from.
Yes, because as far as we can tell, these are the oldest and closest to the tales that the ancient Celts actually told each other. The mythology of pre-Christian Ireland is possibly the best preserved of all branches of Celtic mythology, although many of the tales were transcribed into manuscript by medieval Christian monks, and through the perspective of their eyes, enough material survives to divide the stories into four different groups, or cycles as they have become known. They are the mythological cycle, the Ulster cycle, the Fenian cycle, and the historical cycle.
The mythological cycle is so called because the stories tell the tales of the early Celtic gods and the origins of the Irish. The largest number of the stories, coming from the Book of Invasions, tells the story of the coming of the earliest inhabitants after the biblical flood to the Tuatha De Dananann, the children of Danu. The Tuatha De Dananann were in later times known as the Fae or Fairies, and took residence within the Hollow Hills when the sons of Mele, the Celts themselves, as the last invaders, came and settled in Ireland. Not only do our stories tell of the arrival of the Celts and the division of the land between them and the Tuatha De Dananann, but also we learn much about the arrival of Christianity into Ireland.
We started our own retelling of the tales with the coming of the Tuatha De Dananann and bring in the earlier invasions in backstory and history as told by the characters in the stories. But where do these stories come from?
Good question. There are two main sources for our stories. The first is the Leðurgávla Erin, the Book of Invasions of Erin itself, which is an 11th century text. The earliest of the prose in this manuscript can be dated on linguistic grounds to around the 8th century, and some of the verse may be as early as the 6th century. Our knowledge is further fleshed out by manuscripts known as the Metrical Dinshenchas.
These are a huge collection of verses, best known as the Lore of Places. Each poem gives the legendary origin of the name of an important place, such as Tavir, or Tara as we know it. We've included some information from these poems in our tales, but have not included the poems themselves. We'll have a link in the show notes if you want to pursue this study for yourselves.
By the time of the Middle Ages, the early gods of the Irish were considered heroes and magicians rather than deities in the traditional sense of the term. Often, in common with much of Norse mythology, the tales included the deaths of these gods. The gods of the Celts were mortal gods, so to speak. This has led many scholars to consider that the Tuatha De Dananann were not early Celtic gods at all, but instead, we're looking at heroic sagas. However, the same characters, Lu, the Morrigan, Engus and so on, appear in later cycles, centuries later, showing that they were, in fact, immortal.
There are some other manuscripts from the same period up until the 15th century that complete our, albeit limited, knowledge of the Celtic mythological picture. Such tales include the Battle of Moytura, the Wooing of Etain, and the wonderful Children of Lear.
It is good. There is a 17th century book by Geoffrey Keating called Foras Fesa or Erin, The Basics of Knowledge on Ireland, that we haven't managed to get hold of as yet, that adds lost pieces to our tales. So it's possible that as more information appears or enters the public domain, we'll be able to bring you more tales from the mythological cycle as an addendum later on.
Fascinating stuff, huh? I'd love to do a Celtic study course.
I would too. Yeah.
Anyway.
So much to learn.
Let's take a break and listen to the words of a modern bard, now sadly departed, Rick Allen, and the Raven.
The Raven is calling, she sits at my side. She laughs like a demon, for death is my bride. She has courted me often, but ne'er in the sun. And now she will wed me when the battle is done. The stag is me totem, the bull is your own. It is reason enow that we fight all alone. I have called you my brother, but now we must fight, and the victor be crowned ere the day turns to night. Oh, my brother, be wary for I'll not easily die. Though the season is turning and the sun is a high, my sword it is heavy, my arms they are cold. Though the raven is calling, I'll do battle, say bold. My shield it is broken, like the covenant sworn, twixt the gods and me mother, on the day I was born. They promised her truly that I would not die till the sun stood quite still in the solstice day sky. The raven is calling with her black mocking voice. I would not heed it, but she leaves me nay choice. She sings as she flies across the sun's face, and her shadow it falls on this very place. Now wisdom is folly, and folly is wise, when the battle is joined and the sun's in your eyes. I have fought like the champion I was raised up to be. But the raven is calling, she's calling for me.
That was Rick Allen from his album The Inconstant Bard, with his take on Gwydion Penderwen's The Raven.
Absolutely beautiful.
It was, wasn't it?
Hmm.
We should be hearing more from Rick in later shows. Let's have part two of Stephen's epic poem.
The Light of Lu.
The story so far. The Tuatha De Danann have won Erin from the Fir Bolg and replaced their greedy overlord Bres with the true king, Nuada. Bres allies himself with Erin's enemies, the Fëanor, but salvation is close at hand.
Greedy, vengeful Bres sailed to Erin beside Balor to conquer the Tuatha De Danann with the force of the Fëanor. But a boy with blood of both races in him arrived alone, seeking to stand before Silverhand, who sat on Tara's throne. His name was Lu, foster son of Teiltu, Firbolg Princess, but the guardian at the gate, a flighty fae, was not impressed. Lu claimed to be a warrior, wise man, wielder of words and a worker in wood.
"The men of day have all these," said the fae. "It will do you no good."
"But only I,"
said Lu,
"will single-handedly do all these things."
So he proved himself in every last test of skill and was brought to the king. They named Lu the Long Hand their Samuel Danach, Master of Arts, when he sat in the seat of the sage and played magic music on his harp. For tribute from the Tuatha De came Balor's brutes, 9 times 9, when from the sea came horse and chariot, bounding over the brine. Mare of Mananan, fey lord beyond the 9th wave of the sea. In the chariot rode long-armed Lu, riding, leading a host of the she. Lu cut down 8 nines of his foes with Mananan's sword, and gave the 9 survivors to Silverhand, his lord. They brought news of Lu to Balor, who flew into a rage.
"I care not if he's soldier, sailor, singer, smith and sage. I'll see him dead. I'll have the heads of all his fairy host."
And so the whole Fëanor race set sail for Erin's coast, riding roughshod through Connachta, chaos in their wake. Firbolg's settlers and their King Baldurg proved easy to break. Every fighter and farmer, maker of laws and man of the land, was called to council of war by King Nuada Silverhand. Wizards pledged to raise the powers of land and sky and sea. Dagda led the warriors and weapons single-handedly. Morrigan's true nature, Trion Goddess, was revealed as she spoke her prophecy over Lu riding into the field.
Awake, O child of Herion, fulfillment of promises past. Overthrow your every foe and bring us liberty at last.
Battles and bloodlines. What fortune and fate brought this battle to be? Let's look back through the halls of history. Balor's father, with dark druid's curses on his breath, Balor spied and was cursed with a gaze that brought death. Sons of Nemed, sailing against him, were slain, and for that, Balor's bloodline was cursed again. His death by his grandson foretold that same hour. So his daughter he locked away in his glass tower. A magic cow with more milk than any other, Balor stole from Goban the smith and his brother, Kian, who went after him over the water. But in place of revenge, made love to his daughter. She bore three boys. Two were cast out of the tower, but the mountain druidess kept the third in her power. He learned magic from Manannan, smithcraft from Goban, and fostered with the Firbolg, he became a fighting man. Lu had sworn vengeance on Balor since then. He sent Dagda and Orgmar to rally the men to free their land from Balor's hand. But for Dagda, all did not go as planned. When he made love to Morrigan, Queen of Fae, he was pledged to protect her people that day. So he spied on the Fëanor, but came off worse. They welcomed him and fed him till he nearly burst. Too fat to fight, he met with Fair Atain, who seduced him to reveal his secret name. This put him under oath to bear her on his back. So he lightened his load. It took him so long, she had a nap. She vowed to protect him as he lay with her that night, with her magic, while he gathered forces to fight. So the men were made ready. By Lu they were led. But little did he know, there was treachery ahead.
Oh yes, I remember those scenes so well.
It's funny and tragic all at the same time. I suppose it's actually amazing that the tragedy and the humour translate so well across the centuries.
Yes, it's quite amazing really, isn't it? Now, before we have a look at the main themes in the myth cycle, let's have some more music.
Okay then. So, what have you got?
Well, do you remember early in our series we found and played the music of the spirit singer called Kellyanna?
Yes, her voice is amazing. Reaches deep inside you, especially when she sings about mythological themes.
Yeah, she's fairly magical, isn't she? Well, we're pleased to announce that she's brought out a new album.
Way!
Called Elemental. And we've got a track for you now called The Full Height of Our Power.
Excellent.
Our power. This is the place, and now is the hour. We recognize our sacred. people at the full height of our power.
Amazing. The driving rhythms of tribal dance and... there's something else.
Yes, but she's also singing about the same relationship that the ancient Celts had with their land.
Wonderful.
So let's have a look at the main themes that we can see in the Irish mythological cycle.
As well as our thoughts, we asked you guys what themes you noticed in the stories. So this is what we all came up with.
The first thing we noticed in common with many ancient cultures is that the gods were fallible. They made mistakes, and their stories are full of the consequences of those mistakes and disagreements.
Yes, they were mortal gods. They were born, lived and died. Some commentators, in fact, point to this fact and say we're looking at the tales of once-living heroes, as I mentioned earlier, heroic sagas.
They certainly come across as heroes, don't they? Against this is the reoccurrence of the same characters in later tales hundreds of years later, as well as pointing to earlier and later cultures who've got similar mortal gods, the Greeks, the Egyptians, and the Vikings and so on.
I see. I think the gods live and die in parallel to the life of men, so they can relate to them. Maybe they're even embodied avatars of the divine personas.
Certainly a thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
The other difference with Celtic gods, which the early Irish myths make clear, is the relationship between the gods and the fae.
That's true.
Over the centuries, as they're remembered as the little people, the fairies, or the gentry, or the she even.
That's right. The gods were the fae nobility. But they had courts, didn't they? The Seelie Court and the Unseelie Court.
That's Scottish, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Yes, the Scottish courts are... they have an Unseelie Court and a Seelie Court.
Dark and light fae.
Mm-hmm. Unseelie being the dark fae.
Right, okay. Anyway, back to it then. There were other fae around at the time, but the Tuatha De Danann we hear about in the tales are the kings and rulers of Erin. As we learn later, they interbred with the Fomori. It does make us wonder whether we're dealing with the archetypal story of the battle of light versus darkness here, the beautiful ones versus the evil ones.
Well, some of the Scottish stories about the dark court, the Unseelie Court and the Seelie Court, do the same theme, really.
I wonder whether the Irish had different courts that we don't know the name of as such.
Yeah, not that I know of, but that doesn't mean to say there isn't.
No, just haven't heard of anything. Mm. Okay.
Apart from the gods, the other thing we learn from the tales as being of extreme importance to the ancient Celts are the sacred places, such as Tara, the wonderful Newgrange, and the Hill of Wisnech.
Yes, the land is sacred to them, perhaps even considered as their mother. Now, I know this is very much a modern neo-pagan sort of idea, but they did call themselves the children of Danu, and there are mountains in Ireland called the Paps of Arnu or the Breasts of Danu. Kind of suggests that Danu and the land are one.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
So you think they may have viewed the land as their mother?
Quite possibly. With certain locations as especially important, especially to the druids or priests.
Mm-hmm. So something similar to some of the neo-pagans today.
Yes, but I think with possible historical reference.
Sure. Yes, and we're still trying to find out exactly what the Celts considered their druids or priests to be, really.
Yeah, no one knows for sure, do they?
No. Well, sadly, most of the evidence we've got was brought to us by Romans, and Romans were biased anyway, so...
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah. Mm. Yeah, there are other sources, but we'll deal with that later. The realm of the spirit, or the fae, they considered to be in the west, or over the sea, in a very similar fashion to Tolkien's vision of Valinor, the Undying Lands. To the Celts, they were called the Many-Coloured Lands, the Land of the Ever-Young, the Land of the Ever-Living. There were special locations such as Ublach, the Isle of Apples, or Avalon, and Moymel, the Plain of Joy.
Yes, the journey through the other world is covered in the stories, and many of the elder gods, such as Manannan, have their homes there. It was to Manannan that Lu travelled to be fostered and was taught many skills and loads of magic.
I suppose that's another thing we've learned, isn't it? They had skilled specialists in the art of magic, lore and history. The druids, the Brehon and the bards.
And the bards brings us back to another point. The ancient Celts were very concerned with their history and their genealogies. Even though they possessed the skill of writing, the skill of memory was still considered to be of much higher worth. And the transmission of knowledge History, teaching and poetry was purely oral, and it took years to learn the whole body of Bardic lore, something like 20 years or so, wasn't it?
Really? I remember hearing it took something like 17 years for a filly or a bard to learn the Bardic corpus. But either way, it's a long time.
It certainly is.
Well, leaving you with that rather incredible thought, we're going to wrap up this first half of the show fairly quickly now.
And the second part of this show will be on the feed and available to listen to in a couple of days, just to keep all of our thoughts fresh in our minds.
So, well, that's the end of part one, so check back in a day or two for the final part.
And until then, we'd like to say...
Húlvár!
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. Available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. Find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkenstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.